in. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance. Great save by Markstrom.
Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko.
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Thursday? Hope you're off to a great start. We're going to make your day better. That's what we do. It's Rintoul and, man, it's Jamie Dodd jumping in the chair again today. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm back. Can't get rid of me that easily, Scotty.
On NFL draft day, do you want to be called the Champ Bailey of this show? The Deion Sanders of this show instead of Shohei Ohtani?
Who wouldn't want to be the Deion Sanders? Come on. He's fantastic.
So is Champ Bailey. Great player. Played two ways in college.
But Deion Sanders, I don't know. I have a soft spot for Deion Sanders for whatever reason. It's the swagger. It's what he was able to do in two sports. He's awesome.
I'm right there with you, man. Arguably the greatest cornerback in history. Didn't tackle the same way others do, but a ball hawk. Love it. Hit home runs. Went to a World Series. Yeah, he had a pretty decent career. If you're in the same sentence as Deion Sanders, you're doing okay. Either way, it's Rintoul and Jamie Dodd here for a second consecutive day. Karen Sermon, we are hoping we'll rejoin the program tomorrow. We will move on. As mentioned, it's NFL draft day, and we're going to talk some NHL here just a second, Jamie, because there are some things that are supposed to be dramatic that aren't, and I'm not just talking about the playoff races anymore. We'll get to that in just one second. It's NFL draft day. I put this question out there, and I think you understand, Jamie, why I asked the question. It's because of where we live. What is the best draft to watch? Is it the NFL draft or is it the NHL draft? You can text us right away, 960-960, 650, 650. I'm guessing, Jamie, on my timeline, at Scott Rintoul on Twitter, you have not checked the results recently. What do you think the results say right now?
So is it just NFL or NHL, or did you open it up to other drafts?
Nope, I only put those two drafts on there, and I know the NBA would get some votes. Yeah. MLB's getting no votes. So it comes down to two drafts, I think, for most sports fans in this country. And I do think the NBA draft has a really fun component to it. We can get to the NBA draft in just one second. But which draft do you prefer watching? What do you think the respondents have said so far?
I'm going to guess that it is 60-40 in favor of the NFL.
Other way around. It's 63-37 in favor of the NHL right now. And the reason I asked the question is pretty simple. Because of where we live. I think there are a lot of people who answered truthfully and said, hey, it's the NHL draft. Hockey's my number one sport. Maybe you don't happen to be an NFL fan. I think you're in the vast minority in today's sporting culture. I think there are others, Jamie, who feel obligated to vote for the NHL or hockey in any single poll question like this that ever gets put out.
That's a huge part of it. And another part of it probably is if you are a massive fan of the Flames or the Canucks or the Oilers or whatever it is, but you're more of a casual fan of the NFL, then you might prefer the NHL draft, right? Because it affects your team so much more directly. And yeah, you might love the NFL, but if you don't have a stake in a certain team, maybe you don't get up for the draft in the same way as you do for the NHL draft. So I understand that, but I mean, my vote without hesitation goes to the NFL draft.
You and I are on the same page. Absolutely, 100% lockstep. And that doesn't mean that you're a bigger football fan than you are a hockey fan. That's not what it means. This isn't a referendum on your fandom. It's a better show. There's more intrigue around the NFL draft as well. Some people just don't care as much about football. I understand that. Johnny Canuck in Maple Ridge, one of the first to jump in. NFL, and it's not even close. Better production, more hype, more trades. Those are all factors in this. Next text comes in. Clearly, your listener base is NHL heavy because those results are wild. The NFL is clearly the better product. And yes, that is the context within which we asked the question, Jamie. And it is because we are in Canada and because the number one team for most people and the number one sport for most people is on ice.
Yeah, and Jamie in Richmond echoing those sentiments. Hockey fans are delusional. The NFL draft is a country mile ahead of the NHL. Immediate impact versus waiting 3 years or more. So at least our text audience, Scotty, is siding with us so far. And they get at a couple of things that make it a difference. You know, you talk about the production value and the entertainment element. That's certainly one part of it. But even if you don't care about the show, I think just the nature of the NFL draft and the fact that trades are so much more frequent. And as Jamie in Richmond says, you know, you're making moves on draft day in the NFL that are going to have an immediate huge impact on your team that next season, right? Whether you're taking a quarterback, whether you're trading up for a wide receiver, whatever it is, you're going to have a big, big impact on your team in a way that, you know, unless you're getting Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews at the top of the draft in the NHL, it's probably not going to happen for you in hockey.
I've had a lot of people come back saying the NBA is actually the second best draft to watch. I would counter with this, and I think the NBA and NHL are very close. The problem with the NBA draft is that there's been a devaluation of picks because there have been so many top picks that 3 years after they're made don't end up on rosters or are not impact players at all. The NBA is great for the production element of it, Jamie. And yeah, every once in a while you get that transformational player who is going to take your franchise to the next level. Problem is, there have been a lot that aren't. And here's the other thing with the NBA. The trades are wild. In fact, it's hard to keep track of what happens on NBA draft day because, as I said, picks have been devalued to a certain degree that teams are not afraid to throw them around at all. Hey, here's two future firsts, or we'll give you our second this year and next year just so we can move up three spots. Or, yeah, I know we just drafted this guy, but we'll trade him to you right away because really it was about money slot here and we don't want to have to pay the guy as much because we think he's similar to another player.
Yeah, and there's also, I think this happens more in the NBA than any other draft, the phenomenon where one team makes the pick, but we all know that they're going to trade that pick immediately to another team, but he still has to kind of awkwardly put on the hat for the initial team and do the interview. And sometimes the reporter is almost trying to explain to him, like, well, technically, you know, Charlotte drafted you, but actually we think you're going to Chicago in a trade. And, you know, that can be very entertaining, but it does make it hard, especially if you're a casual fan, to kind of keep up with all the moving pieces on draft night.
We will continue to take your comments on that. 960, 960, 650. 650. Hit us up. You tell us which is a bigger deal for you, which you prefer watching. Heath in Calgary says, the local boys in the morning show in Calgary talking NFL draft, comparing it to the NHL draft. They seem to lean toward the NFL draft being a bigger deal. They also touched on the fact that the NFL throws these university kids to the wolves, and if they don't pan out, they're completely dismissed and sent off to die on some island. I cannot believe how poorly young athletes are handled in that league. The NFL, no, if you're a first-round pick, you stick around for a while. If you're a quarterback, you might not pan out, but almost every single quarterback, I think Mitch Trubisky is the outlier, Jamie, that like if you're a quarterback and you're drafted in the first round, you've got 5 years.
Yeah, you're probably going to get that first 5 years to show that you belong, and you might even get a shot somewhere as a backup at least after that.
I think someone who just texted in is trying to say the NFL draft, but typed NHL twice. So we will filter through your comments. Hit us up 960, 960, 650, 650. You're going to want to later in the segment. You want to take a guess at the Upper Deck starter kit that you could win today. We will give you the first clue a little bit later on this segment. Let's turn our attention to the National Hockey League here, Jamie, and we'll talk plenty of NFL draft throughout the show. We're going to have a fun draft a little bit later on as well. We will reveal the topic as the show goes on. But you, Greg, and I, we are going to draft today. And it's a little more widespread than perhaps you would think. There's not going to be as much drama this year compared to previous years when it comes to handing out NHL hardware. Maybe that's indicative of the playoff races or lack thereof in most of the divisions as well. Like, most of these trophies are pretty much settled. It dawned on me last night. Like, Connor McDavid, we've known this for a long time. He continued to do his thing last night. Everybody saw it. Yep. It's another 3 points. It's 84 on the season. Now it's, does he get to 100 or not? It's amazing how quickly this has switched. Like, there were a lot of people, Jamie, who said, I'm not sure he's going to get to 100. Now they go, 16 points in 9 games, the rate he's going right now? Yeah, he'll get there sooner than I actually thought.
It'd be surprising if he didn't get there. I think the stance a lot of people are taking at this point. And you do got to wonder if McDavid can kind of taste it at this point, and he's going to do what he needs to do to get that milestone.
Sure feels like it. He's got 15 points in his last 15 periods. That doesn't mean there's a point in every single period, but you understand the pace that he's on right now. When you compare that to needing 16 points in 9 games, it feels like it'll be crazy if he doesn't get there, to your point, Jamie. Winnipeg played a lot better against him last night, and yet, because of the power play and because of how explosive he is, yeah, just another 3 points, and they were all assists last night. It's almost as though you discount second assists right now with Connor McDavid, because if he's not scoring the goal or being the primary setup man, it just almost doesn't feel as legit as his other points.
Yeah, if he's not single-handedly creating a goal out of nothing, either for himself or for another player on the team, you kind of shrug. Yeah, I guess, but I mean, you know, you're not going to get to 100 points in 56 games without picking up some secondary ones along the way there.
So he's going to win the Art Ross. We know that. He's going to win the Hart. We know that. And he deserves to win the Hart. The only question is, how many voters find a way not to give him a first place vote? Isn't that more what we're looking at right now when it comes to the Hart Trophy?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I know you said yesterday, Scotty, that you expect somebody will go out there and make a point one way or another of not giving him a first place vote. And, you know, you might be right. I kind of get the sense, especially of what he's doing late in the season, it's going to be so front of mind for voters. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if we do see a unanimous all first place votes for Connor McDavid here. It's just so hard to even begin to make an argument for anyone else. And I know writers and voters have a history of ignoring that and saying, yeah, you know what, I'm going to vote for this guy anyways. But it does feel like this could be a unanimous, no doubt about it kind of year.
If I had to put money on unanimous or not, I'm putting it on not, Jamie, because there's always someone out there who says, you know what, he's going to win anyway, but I want to prove the point that not enough people are paying attention to this player, that not enough people have given this guy credit this year. It's not that McDavid's not the best, but unless I use my vote to highlight the sensational season that this person had, then this guy's going to get left in the dust. And I think a little more of a deal should be made about this guy. I also do believe, and you heard this earlier this season, that there are some who cover the league in the United States that are going to bristle at the thought of the Canadian media pumping the tires of the North Division too hard.
That's an interesting one. Now that's an, and man, I would think that you would still have the ability and the, you know, kind of the context to step back and realize, okay, that might be the case, but Connor McDavid is still the best player in the NHL, right? I would hope that you'd have the ability to step back and do that, but you're right. There are factors. And as I said, I understand all the reasons why, you know, somebody is going to decide to come out and not make Connor McDavid the unanimous Hart Trophy winner here. But I still think, you know, if he continues this tear for the remainder of the regular season and does eclipse that 100-point mark, it's going to be so, so hard to sit down with a straight face and vote for somebody else.
Auston Matthews is going to win the Rocket Richard. It's disappointing we're not going to get a race to the finish. He was the leader going into the season. He was the early favorite for a lot of different reasons, not the least of which is the pace he was on last year. He is not disappointed. He's got a 7-goal lead in those standings. Unless McDavid or Rantanen catches fire in the next week and has multiple multi-goal games, Matthews is going to cakewalk to his first ever Rocket Richard trophy.
Yeah, he is. And I will say, you know, we do take the L on the show, Scotty. I'll take the win here because way back before the season started, I called Auston Matthews as the Rocket Richard winner. Now, to be fair, not exactly a bold declaration on my part. I think he was the odds on betting favorite as well. But hey, I got to take my wins where I can get them.
Absolutely. Sometimes you just got to bet the house, and you bet the house on this one,
yep,
Jamie.
You
went
sure
with Auston Matthews, and my Sebastian Aho argument has long since passed. He's at 21. He's 14 back. I don't think he's going to be able to make up that ground in this amount of time. Matthews just had a sensational year. He's up to 35. The one he scored last night, I don't know if it's his best, but it might be his best of the season. That was pretty insane.
Ridiculous. Just like the hands, and you saw the reaction from other players to it. Like, how is that even possible at full speed in a competitive NHL game? And man, I know, you know, every time we talk about Auston Matthews, Scotty, we get people, Leafs, but at a certain point, you got to be able to separate the jersey he's wearing, the sweater he's wearing, from what he's doing on the ice. And yeah, I get it. He plays for Toronto. It's annoying that they have such a good player, but he's been incredible this year.
Yeah, he's not the most likable player in the league. There are a lot of reasons people aren't down with Auston Matthews, but credit where credit's due. You tip your cap sometimes, and the year he's had has been sensational. Now, a bunch of the other awards, it feels like they're two horse races. It's an either-or feel to a bunch of the other awards over these next 2 to 3 weeks. And then we're left wondering, okay, who's that third-place finalist that gets a little bit of recognition? Like, the Norris is a very good example. If you've been following the Norris race, it's down to two guys, really. It's down to Adam Fox in New York or Victor Hedman with Tampa Bay. Fox has had the better season, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, but Victor Hedman has the name, he's got the brand, he's got the reputation.
Yeah, the Norris, I think more than almost any other award, maybe the Norris and the Selke, it feels like a reputation-based award a lot of the time, right? Like, first you have to have a couple of seasons like Adam Fox is having, and then maybe you'll get consideration for the Norris. But I gotta say, like, as you said, Adam Fox is having the better year. I would like to see the voters give him the Norris. I know Victor Hedman, as you say, he has the resume, he has the track record of doing it, he has all of that, the name recognition. But I think you got to go with the guy who's having the better season. I think that's Adam Fox this year. I would like to see him take home the award. But yeah, it is between those two guys right now.
There's precedent for that happening in a shortened season. And the last time we saw a shortened season outside of last year, I'm talking one that was in around the same number of games, that was PK Subban winning the Norris. And he didn't have the reputation at that point. He had the best year. He was awarded the Norris Trophy. So there is precedent, and maybe Adam Fox ends up getting it.
It'll be interesting to see also, because does the fact that, you know, the Rangers could easily miss out on the playoffs impact Adam Fox's candidacy at all there, right? Tampa, one of the best teams in the league. Again, no surprise there. And, you know, supposed to be an individual award. It's not the MVP award. So there's less of an argument that your team success should factor in. But in a vote that figures to be very, very close, that could be one of the things that tilts it in Hedman's favor.
Calder's down to two guys. It's down to Kirill Kaprizov in Minnesota, or it's down to Jason Robertson. It's one of those two guys. Kaprizov has had the better year, though they're not separated by much in the point totals right now, Jamie, but it's the way he scores. It's the electrifying nature of his game. He's had the better year, but as we've talked about over the course of the past week, there's the age argument that some will have. There's the anti-pro vote, which some look at as an anti-Russian vote as well. This could be very close for those reasons.
I think it's still going to be Kaprizov.
I agree.
Yes, there's the arguments against, and those will be voiced. Those will continue to be voiced. We'll see some voters reflect that. The thing with Kaprizov is it's not just the numbers and the production. Like, he has changed the entire outlook of that franchise,
yes.
It feels like, right? Like, and that's almost more important than having a narrow points lead on Robertson, right? Like, he has completely changed how people look at the Minnesota Wild. They have probably never had a talent like this, certainly not since Marian Gaborik. You see what they're doing in that division. It's and you can't chalk it all up to him, but he's the face of that turnaround. He's made them so much more exciting, so much more relevant. I think for those reasons, he's going to take it home.
I think he should win. I think he will win. And I think a lot of it, Jamie, is going to come down to people saying, here's what I'd like the criteria to be. I've got my reasons that I don't like the criteria as it is right now. But given the criteria, I will give my vote to Kirill Kaprizov begrudgingly. I think there's a faction of that in those who will do the voting this year. The Vezina, doesn't it feel like it's either Vasilevsky or Marc-Andre Fleury this year?
Yeah, probably this year. Wouldn't shock me if Marc-Andre Fleury gets the kind of sentimental late career win there. Not that he's not deserving. He is. But yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
The most difficult one, and like, again, that's an award to me that if you finish third, it's a recognition of your season. Like, Mike Smith might find his way onto the podium. Could be Juuse Saros. There's a bunch of guys in that mix, and who are they going to give the nod to? Like, Mike Smith is a dark horse candidate to be a finalist for the Vezina this year, which is wild to think about given what we thought of the goaltending situation in Edmonton coming into the season.
And it really just shows you, you know, when you start cutting a season down in games, weird things happen, right? The smaller the sample size, the weirder things can happen. And yeah, who would have ever predicted that Mike Smith was going to be knocking on the door of the Vezina conversation?
Maybe what is predictable is that the Jack Adams will end up being the hardest one to decide this year. There are a bunch of coaches who have a very good case. Rod Brind'Amour seems to be the favorite, but it's always hard to tell in this competition.
It's so hard to tell. And the interesting thing with Brind'Amour is so often the Jack Adams Trophy, it kind of goes to one or two teams, right? The team that nobody expected to be in the playoff race, that isn't then in the playoff race, right? That's an easy Jack Adams mark on your resume. And then the other one is the team that everyone thought was going to be really good and then was dominant, like even more dominant than anyone expected. I don't know if Carolina necessarily falls into either of those categories, but I mean, who else are you going to give it to? Dean Evason in Minnesota jumps out, but how much do people give the credit there to Kaprizov rather than to the coach? Brind'Amour's a good candidate. I like him a lot as a coach. I like what he's done with that organization, but it does seem like there's maybe not a clear-cut guy this year for the Jack Adams.
I think Evason will get some mention, and he should. I think Quenneville will get a lot of run because of the reputation, because of the franchise and the reputation of that franchise that he's turned around, and all of a sudden, holy, they're a legit team, and has everything to do with Joel Quenneville maximizing that roster where others haven't been able to in the past. There's a lot of good arguments to be made. Like any year that Barry Trotz gets nominated, we go, yeah, he's still a really good coach, and he should be in the conversation. There's just no separation in that East Division, so maybe no coach out of there gets enough of a vote.
It's a great point, though, because with the Jack Adams, it changes so much from year to year, the candidates, but at the same time, after every season, we say, yeah, Barry Trotz is probably the best coach in the NHL. It feels like he should be nominated basically every year, but it doesn't quite work like that.
Dave Tippett probably won't get too many votes. He'll get you've got Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl.
Yep.
Sure, you're just fine. I think Maurice would have been the coach in the Canadian division that had a shot at this, Jamie, if Winnipeg hadn't fallen into a little bit of a tailspin here because of what people thought about them going into this season. I think Paul Maurice might have had a shot at this. Look, if the Vancouver Canucks had been able to fashion some sort of late season run, Travis Green might have got consideration, not to win it, but if they'd put together something that nobody saw coming, he might get consideration.
Yeah, it would be enough. Again, we're talking about a shortened season, a season with a lot of unprecedented barriers and obstacles for teams to overcome. So you're right. If he'd been able to put them in the conversation and had some sort of really inspirational run down the stretch, that might have been enough to put himself there. Not going to happen, obviously, and it does not seem like there's going to be anyone from the Canadian division up for this one.
Green tried to make his way into some other power rankings last night. Canucks were no good. That was a tough game to watch. If you're a Senators fan, it was a fun game to watch because the young guys were going. Brady Tkachuk's getting himself the Gordie Howe hat trick. If you're a Canucks fan, it was, what the F is going on? Like, honestly, what's going on here? I know they're supposed to be kind of tired, but what is this? Travis Green wasn't having it after last night's game. Have a listen.
Yeah, we might get tired with all these games, but you're like, again, you can win when you're tired. You've got to be smart. You got to do the right things. You got to make the right plays. You can pass a puck on the tape when you're tired. You can make a good decision and get a puck behind them and not turn it over and not make hope plays when you're tired. But that's being mentally strong as well. And that's understanding that maybe I've got to play a little simpler game. Maybe I got to play direct. Maybe I got to put a puck behind here that I don't quite have my jump. And we kind of gave into it a little bit. And sometimes we do that when we get down as a team because I know our guys want to win so bad.
You don't hear it that often. He doesn't go off after games very often. Jamie's usually pretty calm, cool, and collected. He lost it during the course of the game when the Canucks went down 3 yesterday as well.
Yeah, called the timeout, ripped into his team. Not something we see very often from Travis Green within the game, even that he will use his timeout like that to just lay into his team. And, I mean, you heard the frustration after the game, too.
He didn't make it into the top five, though. Top five of what, Jack Adams? No, you and I have had this longstanding theme on this show of NHL coaches that you'd be most afraid to fight, like the power ranking of toughest coaches. Travis Green, it was a nice impassioned rant, and maybe he moved his way up somewhere hovering around the top 10, but it wasn't enough to get into the top five, Jamie. So you and I last night, we decided we'd put together our official top five. We've said this for a very long
time.
Let's
do it.
Let's put together the top five. We will start at five, and number five is a very surprise candidate here today of coaches you'd be most afraid to fight. It's Jared Bednar of the Colorado Avalanche. I know that will be a head-scratcher to some. Explain why we have Bednar on this list.
So Jared Bednar, flies under the radar, especially considering he coaches one of the best teams in the NHL. Jared Bednar, only 49 years old, right? So, I don't want to be an ageist here, Scotty, but I think the physical condition, the age does count in this discussion. 6'3", over 200 pounds. And I don't know about you, but this counts for me, and I'm not just pandering to our audience. I give a little bit of a bump to anyone who comes up through the WHL. Like, I feel like the WHL, if you're going to fight in the WHL, you got to be tough as nails. Jared Bednar, 200 penalty minutes. Now, he didn't play in, like, the most wild era in the 80s of the dub. He was in the early 90s there, but 200 penalty minutes in 62 games for the Spokane Chiefs. 6'3", over 200 pounds. Tough customer, I'm guessing.
Yeah, he's the strong, silent type, but if you ever get him mad, like, watch out. So that's why we put him at number five. At number four, we have the head coach of the Arizona Coyotes, which is really no surprise when you know how Rick Tocchet played in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet, you just got to look at his Hockey DB page and, the number of penalty minutes racked up. If you remember how he played, the style of play, it's an easy choice to have him on the list.
Now to the podium. Joel Quenneville comes in at number three. We had some debate about this because of his age, Jamie, but when you see him furrow his brow, when you see him lose it on the bench, and you know that that snap factor is there combined with old man strength, Joel Quenneville makes the podium.
I probably would have gone for Tocchet over Quenneville, but look, I wouldn't want to be in an argument with Joel Quenneville, that's for sure. I wouldn't want to have him mad at me, and you're right. The snap factor, the anger, the old man strength, he deserves to be in the mix.
Number two, Craig Berube. Go look at the HockeyDB page. Go look at how he played in the National Hockey League. Again, not a guy who loses it at very many press conferences, but you see him when those eyebrows go down. He's mad. He's focused laser steel on something. No chance you want to mix it up with him.
Yeah, another WHL product here on the list as well. Guy who crested 300 penalty minutes in the NHL at one point. We'll get to number one here, but it's number one and number two are in a tier by themselves, right? And it's Craig Berube and the guy we're about to name.
Yeah, Rod Brind'Amour. He's just in too good a shape. He's too strong. He's too dynamic of a guy. Like, he's got so much energy. Rod Brind'Amour is the guy that you would be most afraid to fight among NHL head coaches.
Yeah, it's Brind'Amour and Berube. If we were going to do like a bracket-style competition between all of the coaches in the NHL, they get the top two seeds easily for me. And that's the matchup you'd want to see in the final.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people wondering, where's John Tortorella on this list? Here's the thing. We talked about the age vote. Well, Tortorella's gotten a little older, and while he has the snap factor, he's not that big of a dude.
He's 5'8". That might surprise a lot of people, and that matters. I know small guys can be really tough. They can be feisty, but, you know, we were debating him versus Bednar, and that's a 7-inch difference, right? That's reach. That's leverage. That's everything. It makes it hard to include Torts.
Yeah, he got votes. Daryl Sutter got votes for the farm strength because that's a real thing. Alain Vigneault got votes because if you've seen him go off, he can get pretty feisty, but they just weren't good enough to make it into the top five, Jamie.
No.
That is the definitive top five coaches we're afraid to fight list. Paul Maurice, too, said someone, no chance, man. Like, Paul Maurice, I've got a lot of time for him. I've got days to listen to Paul Maurice at the podium. Paul Maurice isn't making this list, Jamie. Come on.
No, absolutely not. And that's no disrespect, right? There's a lot of different styles. There's a lot of different ways to be a good coach. You don't have to be physically imposing and someone that players and everyone else would be afraid to fight. But no, he's not sniffing the list.
What about Dallas Eakins, you guys? I think you're omitting him.
Dallas Eakins is in very good shape, and if it came down to an endurance competition, Dallas Eakins has my vote. Unfortunately, as scrappy as he is, Greg, he's a middleweight, and the guys we're talking about here are heavyweights.
6'2", 200?
Compared to Rod Brind'Amour.
Yeah. I'd still give him an honorable mention, though.
There's no way Dallas Eakins is 6'2", 200 pounds.
That's what he's listed at. Maybe
that's what he was listed as a player, Greg. He's lost weight.
He doesn't weigh 200 anymore.
He's like an Ironman competitor now, and I'm not even joking about that. Like, Dallas Eakins is an endurance athlete. He's dropped weight. He's like the Sedins when you compare them, what they look like at the beginning of their career to what they look like now as they're running marathons. Dallas Eakins just isn't in the same weight class. Like, if we're having a middleweight bout, okay. And endurance and technique, all of those different things, maybe I consider him. We will move on. We will get you the first clue in the Upper Deck Starter Kit giveaway, and we will talk to Andrew Raycroft next on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. We promised an Upper Deck Starter Kit clue, and this is the way it works. Every single day, Vancouver, Calgary, each text message inbox, we are giving away an Upper Deck Starter Kit, which includes a trading card binder, three packs of Upper Deck cards from this season, an exclusive Sophomore Sensations card, one poster, one trading card collector's guide as well. We give you clues. When you think you know the answer, text in. There is no penalty for having the wrong answer. You just need the right answer to qualify. Jamie, what is the first clue on the board today? And we're talking active NHL players.
Clue number one, active NHL players. He no longer plays for the team that drafted him. So that doesn't narrow it down that much, but you can start thinking about, you know, players who might have been in the news this week that fits. And just as a reminder, make sure you sign your name when you text in with the answer.
There is always some sort of relevance to what's happening in the National Hockey League as to the player that we pick for this. So if you think you know a storyline and a player who might fit that profile, you can throw it there out there. Again, no penalty if you choose the wrong person. You can just get the right person in a little bit later on in the program. Andrew Raycroft set to join us here momentarily. We'll get into a number of things with the former Leafs, Canucks, Bruins, Stars, goaltender, now an analyst with Nesson as well. Some goalie news coming down just before the program today, Jamie, that Ryan Miller has decided at the age of 40 to call it a career.
Yeah, of course, former Canuck goalie for a relatively short period there. People remember him mostly from his time with Buffalo, but what a career. I mean, you think about what he did at the international stage, what he did at the NHL level. Really, really impressive career for Ryan Miller.
I think most people agree that winning, just assigning wins and losses to goaltender specifically, it's a flawed stat. But since it happens to be a stat, he is the winningest U.S.-born goaltender in history. It'll be interesting to see what that counts for. He didn't quite get to 400 wins. We'll ask Andrew Raycroft if there is a case to be made. I think there is, and I think he'll end up following just short, but I do think, Jamie, someone will make the case at some point in that boardroom. Look, Ryan Miller, should we consider putting him into the Hockey Hall of Fame?
I think he has a Vezina. He has a longevity, so he racked up some counting stats. You know, you say didn't get to 400, but still has some impressive counting stats. And did some impressive things internationally for Team USA. Not a gold medal, but still getting medals for them, being a big part of that team. That combination, yeah, it's going to put him in the conversation for sure.
The other part that'll get interesting is these years go on and the league has become more competitive, more parity. And I think we're having a better indication now, Jamie, of how difficult it is to win a cup. Like we've said forever, it's the toughest trophy to win in all of sports. I think the longer this goes on, players, goaltenders, what have you, will get more credit for getting close but not getting over, and Ryan Miller falls into that category.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. For when you're handing out individual accolades like the Hall of Fame, right? Yeah, team success like the Stanley Cup is going to be part of it, but I don't think we're going to give as big a demerit to players that didn't win the Cup as we used to.
Andrew Raycroft, as mentioned, he joins us now, former NHL goalie and analyst with Nesson as well. It's draft day in the National Football League, and Andrew expected to be in the Patriots war room later today. Right, Andrew?
Yeah, far from it, but believe me, there is nothing but talk about whether the Patriots are moving up, moving down. I mean, it's everyone's got an opinion today, so it'll be quite the night for Patriot Nation. I won't be paying any attention to it. Bruins are in the Garden tonight. But yeah, all eyes on the Bill Belichick today.
Yeah, what does he do? Is this a guy who moves up? He never drafts quarterbacks early. Is he going to get one today? That's something we'll be talking about throughout the course of our show. But as you mentioned, the Bruins in action tonight. You've been most closely following the best division in hockey this year, which is the East. How do you rank the four playoff teams in that division in terms of ability to win the Stanley Cup?
It's amazing. It's day-to-day. It really is between the top four teams. We see them on a nightly basis. The Bruins just went into Pittsburgh the last two games. Pittsburgh looked like they were never going to give up a goal. The Bruins couldn't score for four periods. Then the Bruins found a way to chip away, and then they come out with the split and a 3-1 win on the back half and look really good doing that. So the top two lines dominating, essentially, the Pittsburgh Penguins' top two lines. There's nights Washington beats the brakes off the Bruins 8-1, and then the next week the Bruins win 4-1. So my ranking still, I'm trying not to be a homer, but I really truly believe when it comes down to a Game 7 series, I like the core. I like the addition of Hall on the second line. I think the Bruins are going to be the toughest out if all injuries stay the same. I think they're the toughest out in the division with Washington and Pittsburgh right behind them. I think Anders Lee not being in the lineup for the Islanders, I think they're the distance fourth, in my opinion, going into the playoffs from the East Division.
And yet they made it to within a round of the Stanley Cup last year, and there's a very trod system, and the playoff success they've had in recent years that they can lean on. Is Boston's biggest advantage heading into the playoffs, providing health, their goaltending?
Yes. Yes, it is, out of these four teams, and that's what we've talked about a little bit in the past week. Is you look at Tristan Jarry, he's playing really well right now, but if you stack him up against Tuukka in a seven-game series, you got to give him the nod. Washington, Samsonov, Vanecek, two young guys, unproven guys, that's where you look at their weakness. And then if Varlamov's done great, Sorokin, they play behind a system that really benefits goaltenders, similar to Boston. But when it comes down to it, when the chips are pushed to the middle, I think the Bruins' core, the Bruins' team, feels more confident in what they have between the pipes than any of the other three teams.
Andrew, you know, you mentioned Taylor Hall and the impact he's had since coming over from the Sabres to the Bruins. Really turned his season around, been great for Boston since the trade deadline acquisition. What is Taylor Hall doing differently, and what about the Bruins has allowed him to have such immediate success with the team?
Well, number one is his speed on the second line, playing with Krejci and Craig Smith. Now all of a sudden, there's speed on both sides of David Krejci, and that's opening up room for David Krejci. There's so much talk about David Krejci and the playoffs he had and playing with big wingers, Lucic, Horton, back in the day, leading the playoffs in scoring in 2010 and 2013, or 2011, I'm sorry, 2011, 2013, that's playoff Krejci. The speed is doing the similar thing, opening up a lot of ice for Krejci. He's able to find that space with Smith driving down the wing, with Hall driving down the wing. It's pushing the D back, opening up room off the rush. And the Bruins just haven't had that all season long. They were not scoring goals off the rush, and now they are in the last 2 weeks on a consistent basis. So I think Hall is just energized. He's playing more of a 200-foot game than what I saw him play in Buffalo, but that's understandable when you're losing games, and it's a lot harder to go up and down the ice than when you're playing with Krejci and Smith the way they are right now.
And just looking around the league a little bit, one of the things Scotty and I were talking about earlier in the show was the Vezina Trophy race. It seems like at this point it's going to be between Andrei Vasilevskiy and Marc-Andre Fleury, both having fantastic seasons. If you had a vote for the Vezina, which of those goalies would get the nod from you?
Well, as much as the flower is sentimental, I mean, the big cat, Vasilevskiy's, I think he should have it every year at this point, the way he plays. I think it gets overlooked a little bit with the talent that Tampa has. You overlook the wins, you overlook some of the numbers, but watching him consistently in highlights and the way he moves, he's lights. He's far and away for me the guy. And I know Flower has been amazing this year with his ability to win games and find a way, but for me it's Vasilevskiy in a runaway.
Feels like the Vezina comes down to which Andre is your favorite, Marc-Andre or Andrei Vasilevskiy. Andrew Raycroft joining us here today, former NHL goalie, Nesson analyst with Scott Rintoul and Jamie Dodd. Part of the conversation in Canada is about the former Vezina Trophy winner, the reigning Vezina holder, Connor Hellebuyck, and how he looks right now. Better outing last night, but he hasn't been at his sharpest. And some of the other situations around the North are about goalies who don't have playoff experience or how rusty they might be in a case of a Carey Price. When's he coming back from injury? As a former goalie, what concerns you more when you're looking at a team's playoff chances in the goaltending position? A goalie with no playoff experience or a goalie who's not at his sharpest down the stretch?
I would lean towards the guy who's playing better. I think you get yourself a little bit closer with the experience, but again, we've seen it over the with Jordan Binnington 2 years ago is a perfect example, the most recent example. If you're playing well as a goaltender, the experience falls off pretty quickly, whether it's a game or two into those playoffs. If you're playing well and you carry that into the first two or three games, you really get on a roll, and we've seen so many goalies get on a roll. So I think that's more important. I think it also goes to how the team's playing in front. You watch Connor Hellebuyck, you watch the Winnipeg Jets, they're giving up. I mean, they've always given up a bunch of odd man rushes, and Hellebuck's covered up a lot of warts that their defensive system has. And when it doesn't, that's not getting better. The defense doesn't get better when the goaltender struggles. If anything, it gets a little tighter. It gets worse. It opens up a little bit more. And I think that's part of the problem in Winnipeg, just as much as Hellebuyck struggled not to be at the same Vezina winning form. But I think that defensively, that team gives a lot of opportunities up, and that's more concerning than anything else.
Yeah, with Binnington, I'm just wondering who he's going to fight on a nightly basis right now. What's he doing?
He is an ornery little guy, isn't he? He's brought that edge that they talked about through the Stanley Cup, but I think he's got a little bit more confidence, a little more comfortable now he's in the National Hockey League, and it feels like he's going around looking for it, and You know, it'll be interesting to see how long he can continue to do that without falling out of favor with a few more guys throughout the league.
Well, if Vegas wins that division, he may not want to bite off more than he can chew if it's Robin Leonard. Marc-Andre Fleury.
Robin Leonard might put him in his place.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be going around slashing guys too much in between whistles while they're scraping the ice, because Robin Leonard will make quick work of him.
As a guy who's been there in the postseason, you tell me this. How does a playoff game, just from a feel standpoint, how does it feel different than a regular season start in a big game?
There's no way I'm eloquent enough to completely explain it properly. It's all nerves. It's intensity. It's the feeling of not making a mistake. You have to be. You just feel like you have to be perfect. You feel like you want to be perfect, and it really does get faster out on the ice. And the guys are making quicker plays. You have better players playing more minutes. You have players that aren't up to speed sitting on benches. They don't get extra opportunities. And then special teams, the urgency that every play has, it truly goes up 3, 4, 5% every single play. And so the best word I have is urgency. I think throughout a regular season, you lack that urgency. But as soon as that puck drops in game one of the playoffs, you know that every single shift can change momentum, can make the difference between bowing out in the first round and going on to win a Stanley Cup.
A couple of interesting pieces of goaltending-related news around the league this morning, Andrew. One of them, Flyers goalie Carter Hart is going to miss the remainder of the regular season. He has an MCL sprain in his knee. Now, he was struggling a lot this year anyways. Now with the injury and, again, with his performance this season anyways, how concerned are you that Carter Hart is going to be able to get back to, you know, the path that we all thought he was on? His first 2 years in the league were so strong, and now he's had this really difficult year. How concerned are you that this is going to potentially derail his career?
I'm not concerned. I think he was due for a bump in the road. I mean, the run he was on from his first year juniors out west and winning MVPs and juniors and CHL goalie of the year every year he played and world junior, he was just due for a bump and in the road. And that all goalies go through it. Carey Price, that's a great example of what he went through in Montreal his first few years and came out of the gates flying. Then Jaroslav Halak takes his job, and it was a matter of time, I think, for Carter Hart. And I think this season you can flush it even easier because of all the things that went on around the year with COVID and protocols. I think he'll be able to now shut this year down, not have to think about it anymore, get a little healthy in the next few weeks and get back to work and just be able to work all summer for a normal season next year. So I'm not concerned. I think if we're in this point and he struggled again next year, then it's a whole nother animal. But I'm not concerned that he won't be able to figure it out. I think he was due for a bump in the road that all young goalies get.
Ryan Miller has called it a career now, Andrew. He's the winningest U.S.-born goalie. Doesn't quite get to 400 wins. I think it will be a debatable case, but I'd love your opinion on it. Does Ryan Miller at least have a case? Whether he gets in or not, does he have a case for the Hockey Hall of Fame?
He has a case. He has a case. I think the one thing that stands out right away that goes to the negative for me is the fact that in his era, there's four or five other guys that, you know, there's Flower, there's Lundqvist, there's Luongo, two of those three didn't win cups either. Two of those three won trophies. They got more wins than him. They got Olympic medals, gold medals, just a little bit more decorated than Ryan. So those guys have to go in before him. And then you start looking at, all right, how many guys can you have in the Hall of Fame during this 20-year stretch? So he's very close. I just think having those other few guys do a little bit more in their careers, and that's not degrading, that's not negative in any way whatsoever. I would have done anything to have a Ryan Miller career. I just think that it might keep him out of that Hall of Fame just because of those three guys around him and what they were able to do.
I agree with you. I think he'll end up falling just short in that regard, but it'll be a discussion point. It's interesting you mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury, who we brought up contending for a Vezina this year. When he went to Vegas, I don't think people would have put him in the Hall of Fame discussion. And now he's almost rescued that late in his career, hasn't he?
He has. He has. And to be able to continually move up that win chart, that becomes – when you get into the top five, you get into the top two or three. I mean, it's the same as Lou. How do you not have him in? And I know he didn't win a Vezina. I know he didn't – but he didn't win a Stanley Cup. How do you not have one of the guys who won the most games in the entire NHL history? And outside of the top five, again, Ryan Miller, you get down into the top seven, eight, nine, ten – then you start looking at longevity, and that's why they were able to do it nowadays. But again, you have the top five. You get into that top five, I think that changes your Hall of Fame status.
Hey, great stuff, man. You're a Hall of Famer on this show. You can come back anytime. Belichick's going to call you to make the pick. You're watching the Bruins game.
Yeah, I got to run. But he's called me three times since I've been on the phone. He wants to know my opinion.
Yeah, Justin Fields. What's your final breakdown of Justin Fields and whether or not he should be a New England Patriot?
No, I'm telling you, New England, all of the talk about it, and Belichick's going to draft down. He's going to trade down, take two defensive guys in 20 in the first, one in the second round, and ruin everybody's day here on talk radio in Boston.
Okay, so if he trades for Jimmy Garoppolo and he brings him back to town this weekend for a late pick, will that be a welcome sign for the Patriots? How will that be handled by Patriots fans?
That's the majority. That's what people want. I think after last season and them losing, even though a young quarterback will excite everybody and the draft move everyone up, I think they want to win next year. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo is their best opportunity to do that with all the signings they've had. So I think the majority of people would rather see Jimmy G back with a defensive draft. But it's not as sexy, but I think that's what most people want. They want to win next year. There's no question about that.
Former NHL goaltender and NFL insider Andrew Raycroft with us here this morning. Thanks, buddy.
Andrew Schefter Raycroft. You got it, guys.
Love it. Love it. We'll do this again soon. Thanks, Andrew.
You got it. Take care, guys.
That is Andrew Raycroft giving you a bit of a view in Boston. I'm not surprised by that being the case, Jamie, as much as, you know, 49ers fans have probably moved on mentally, and the vast majority of mainstream NFL fans have a certain opinion of Jimmy Garoppolo. The Patriot way and the fact that they groomed him and that he was Tom Brady's protege at one point and what they witnessed last year being such a stark contrast to what they've known forever, I'm not surprised that the fan base would welcome a Jimmy G trade back to New England.
It just goes to show you, though, Scotty, how quickly things can change in the NFL. Like, Patriots fans have gone from enjoying the greatest run of quarterback play in the history of the league, just utter consistency and excellency for almost two decades, 1 year removed from that, and they're praying that Jimmy Garoppolo can come save them. And I'm not trying to slam Jimmy G. I'm just saying that is a big, big drop down from the standard they are used to in New England. It's interesting that that is the sentimental choice that fans are hoping happens today, because, man, they were used to a lot better standard than that for a long time there in New England.
It is NFL draft day. That theme will run throughout the course of the program in a bunch of different ways today. Jamie, I will ask you a question next that I'll pose to our listeners as well as to where that changes, where your opinion changes when it comes to the draft. You can apply this to the NFL. You can apply this to the NHL. I'll explain what I'm talking about. We'll check in on the poll and get to some of your responses. There's some funny ones next right here on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Scott Rintoul and Jamie Dodd with you on what is NFL draft day. We're going to tie that into the NHL. We're going to tie it into other sports as this show goes on. The response from the people who take the time to actually explain their thoughts, Jamie, sometimes skews much differently than the results of just the poll where you see the numbers. Like right now online, I asked, which draft do you prefer watching? And more people are saying the NHL draft than the NFL draft. Yet those who've taken the time to respond, overwhelming majority is arguing for the NFL draft.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. I wonder if maybe more intense sports fans, let's put it that way, are taking the time to text in versus maybe more casual people who just follow the NHL are taking the time to vote in the poll question. I don't know.
Rick in Richmond says, I think the NFL is by far the best draft. The unpredictability, the trade surprises make it very intriguing. It's the only draft where a player is rated in the top five and he still might be there at 15 or 20. That rarely happens in the National Hockey League. That's very true. The NBA, it's really hard. The global nature of the sport, the rankings can be all over the map. There seem to be very few sure things in the National Basketball Association. That draft is just filled with trades all over the place. It's the biggest thing to me that the NHL draft lacks, the number of deals.
Yeah. And specifically, like, we'll see draft day deals, and those are exciting. You know, the Canucks have been involved in them. Every team has them, right? Big draft day deals. They do happen, but there's not the same volume of deals to move around the board, right? And that's one of the most exciting things about the NFL draft is teams are aggressive. If their prospect is sitting there at 15 and they're drafting at 20, they're going to be aggressive trying to move up. And that creates a sense of excitement and a sense of you never know what's going to happen before every pick that I really enjoy.
Before I get to a tweet that has made me think, and I've got an answer for that person who tweeted, I want to ask the question to you, Jamie, because this does play in. At what point of the draft, at what point in the NHL draft, the NFL draft, you choose whatever league you want, at what point of the draft do you want your team using ceiling over certainty? Because I think that's something we see in a lot of drafts, and the NFL is a pretty good example. Like, the Cincinnati Bengals are sitting 5 today. If they draft the best offensive tackle available, it won't excite their fan base in a way that a quarterback would, but everybody will be okay with it because we understand the importance and the floor is a lot higher than some of the high-risk picks. At what point are you willing to opt for risk over certainty?
So it's different. It's very different between the two drafts, right? Because in the NFL, you can feel somewhat confident of getting a contributor in the middle rounds, right? Rounds 3, 4, 5. You're not going to hit on all of those guys, of course, but you have a decent chance of getting a guy who's going to contribute to your team. Maybe not right away, but certainly year 2, year 3, right? In the NHL draft, I mean, there's no sure things in the first round. There's no sure things in the second round. So I would say, I mean, by the time you get to the third round, I am prioritizing upside and ceiling much, much more because there really are. There's no certainty. There's no sure things. If you're saying, yeah, this guy doesn't have as high a ceiling, but we think he's going to be a really good chance to be an NHL contributor, there's still such a good chance that he flames out and never makes it to the NHL. I would rather see my team certainly starting in round 3 and for the rest of the draft, value the upside of the prospects in the NHL.
Okay, so here's why I wanted your answer on that before I get the tweet in. This comes from Matt, who says, it's interesting how the NFL has so many more resources and has this circuit to judge players from ages 18 to 22, and yet will make massive mistakes judging star positions. Meanwhile, in the NHL, they're judging 17-year-olds from around the world, and they generally correctly predict who's a future star. I disagree with an aspect of that, Jamie. I disagree with that a lot in terms of, hey, they correctly predict who's a future star, but it goes back to this question of certainty. Now, the reason that you see more busts at the top of the NFL draft comes down to one position, and it comes down to quarterback.
Yep.
And the reason that happens is because, unlike in hockey, if you draft the right quarterback, it changes your franchise completely. With everything that Connor McDavid is, and from an excitement standpoint, entertainment standpoint, he's changed that franchise immeasurably. But one guy can generally not do it in the NHL unless he plays goal. And we're not drafting goalies at the top of the draft because it is so much more unpredictable. So the swings that get taken at the top of the NFL draft are for good reason. It's as hard to project quarterbacks as it is to project goaltenders. But the NHL leans toward more certainty there at the top of its draft, whereas the NFL says, look, man, if we hit this out, it changes everything for us.
Well, and I think the thing at the top of the NHL draft is certainty and upside tend to be the same thing at the top of the NHL draft, right? Like, if a player has, you know, scores 1.5 a game in their draft season in the CHL, there's a really good chance that they have upside, and there's a really good chance that they're at least going to be an NHL contributor, right? And we know that. So it's at the NHL draft, in the top 5 picks, let's say, and certainly for picks number 1 and 2, virtually year in, year out, the prospect with the highest ceiling also is the prospect with the most certainty, right? That's just how the NHL draft plays out. And then that, you know, the certainty tails off dramatically once you get past pick 5, pick 10, etc. It starts to level off a lot. But yeah, at the top of the NHL draft, it's okay, this player has the most talent, the most upside, and because of that, he's also the surest bet to actually make it to the NHL.
Yep, I think everything you said there is absolutely correct. We're asking you, which is the more entertaining draft? Is it the NHL draft? Is it the NFL draft? Which one do you prefer watching? Again, most of the texters are saying things like Greg, who texts in, the NFL is the superior draft. The wheeling and dealing is great. The college players are showcased every weekend on the American stations, unlike the CHL players. Plus, NFL players are on the roster come September. That's a big part of it as well. It's the instant impact. You mentioned that in the first hour of the program. Other texters have mentioned that as well. Most of the NHL players you're going to wait on. You know, Quinton Byfield made his debut last night, but if he hadn't played a game for the LA Kings this season, we wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Yeah, there's maybe, you know, usually the first overall pick is straight to the NHL. Maybe one or two other guys in the top 10 go straight to the NHL. But other than that, even if you pick in the back half of the first round, you know, you're probably waiting 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe longer in some situations, depending on how the prospect develops. I mean, your first round pick in the NFL, he better play. He better be good. Right? He better be a starter for you in year one.
And if he's not, you got a problem.
Your general manager's in trouble.
Yeah, what did you do? And, you know, it's interesting in this year's NFL draft that there is one team atop the board that has more pressure on it than any other. And it's because it put itself there. And it's the San Francisco 49ers. They've got the best team of any picking up there. And it's not even close, quite frankly. Like, they're a far better operation than Jacksonville or the New York Jets, Atlanta, any of those teams. And because of that, there's so much more pressure on this, because what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch decided to do in moving up from 12 to 3 and proclaiming we're grabbing a quarterback is they decided to make a tenure-defining decision today, Jamie.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, we don't really see trades with that kind of stakes, with those kinds of stakes in an NHL draft. I think back to, you know, the Canucks trading Corey Schneider for Bo Horvat. That's a big deal. A lot of pressure on that to pan out. You're choosing Schneider, or you're choosing Luongo over Corey Schneider at the time. It has worked out well for the Canucks, but yeah, there was a lot of pressure on that pick. It's still nowhere near what the Niners are doing, right? Where, as you say, they are setting the direction of the franchise in one way or another tonight, right? Like, this is going to determine whether Kyle Shanahan's tenure in San Francisco is a success or not. Or there, at least there's a very good chance that it determines that.
Well, and this is the other interesting part of this pick, because the Niners are built to have some success right now. And we've seen that a roster with a competent quarterback, whether you think Jimmy G's good or bad or whatever, he was competent at the very least, Jamie. I make this argument all the time. You don't need a star quarterback to win Super Bowls. It certainly enhances your chances. But if Jared Goff can take a team there and Jimmy Garoppolo can take a team there, go down the list. Like, you can get to the Super Bowl. And look, if you're 10 minutes from winning a Super Bowl, yeah, you've got the ability to win. Some things didn't break their way, and Jimmy Garoppolo was part of it, and Kyle Shanahan was part of it, and Emmanuel Mosley was the start of it, but I don't need to go down that rabbit hole again today. You and I both know how I feel about that situation.
Yeah, I've seen you talk about Emmanuel Mosley on an occasion or two.
But it's the any given Sunday. Like, any team can win that game on one day because it's a one-off. It's different than a seven-game series where generally the better team is going to end up winning if you play enough times. The sample size is so small. You get to that game, you can win that game. So you can win with somebody who's not a top-tier quarterback in the NFL, but your environment has to be that much better.
Yeah, it has to be very, very good. And I think probably the thought process from Shanahan and Lynch here is, yeah, okay, theoretically we can win with Jimmy G, but are we maximizing our chances to win, right? How much would having a top-end quarterback move the needle for us in the other direction? You know what I mean? Like, how many opportunities at the Super Bowl are we going to get with Jimmy G because he has to win X number of playoff games to get there? Do we have a better chance at doing that with a different quarterback under center? There's no question you can win with a quarterback like Garoppolo, but there's also no question that having a truly elite or high-end quarterback increases your chances of winning.
We're comparing the NHL and NFL draft. That's one of the themes of the show. We're going to do a draft next hour as well. We're going to do a venue draft just to tease the listeners, whet the appetite, have you thinking out there in listener land a little bit. Here's what we're going to do next hour. Jamie, Greg, and I are going to do a venue draft. So one of the things we're all looking forward to once we're able to get back together as big groups and go to sporting events is having a trip. Karen and I talked about this on a recent show, like that bucket list. How's it changed for you? Like, what's on your bucket list? We're going to do kind of a hybrid of that, Jamie. We're going to look at the Big Four and the CFL. We're going to put them all together, and we're going to draft venues next hour. So we will determine the order of the draft, who picks first, who picks third. And then after that, we'll have to pick a venue from each of the five leagues that we're talking about, NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, NHL, CFL, and we'll see who comes up with the best venue. And what will be interesting about it is sometimes it depends on the team that plays there. Sometimes it depends on the environment. Sometimes it depends on history. Like, there's a lot of different factors to consider when you're making your argument.
There it is. It's going to be fascinating. You know, I have some sleeper picks in my back pocket ready to go. I'm excited for later.
You want to be the guy who surprises everybody.
That's right. That's right. I want to be like, you know, when the Eagles take somebody off the board and their fans just lose their minds booing on the telecast.
Okay, so here's the other part of it, though, and we'll talk about this more just after the top of the next hour. We want you involved in this. Like, think of your best venues from those sports. Some of them will be bucket list items for you. Others will be, no, I've been there before, and I would go back because it's so great. Like, that's a consideration as well. Like, how much of it is, well, I've never been there, I want to get there, and how much of it is, look, I know what the environment is. It's so much better than any other place. I'm taking it again because that's the one I want.
Yeah, I think you, like, I just know in my list, I've been fortunate enough to go to a couple of the places that are going to be on my list, and I'm not knocking them down because of that. Yeah, it would be great to get to a new place. I want to do that as well, but if you have a sure thing, something that you know is going to be a quality experience basically every time you go, that's got to be high in your rankings.
Well, and does it depend on where it is? Like the ancillary benefits of choosing said venue. Like, you're going to a great city, and not only is the game going to be great, but everything around it, all of the trappings are going to be incredible. We'll do the venue draft next hour. We promised you another clue, so we're going to get to it here. The Upper Deck Starter Kit giveaway, we're doing it every single show. We don't have right answers yet, and not surprising, Jamie, because the first clue that we gave in the first hour, extremely vague.
It was very, very vague. It was that this player does not play anymore with the team that drafted him. And I said to you off the air, Scotty, it was kind of like an ink blot clue where it really reveals more about the people doing the guessing than it does about the actual answer, because in the Calgary inbox, 960-960, I would say we had about 50 Sam Bennett guesses. Sam Bennett, top of mind for Calgary Flames fans right now. But the answer is not Sam Bennett. I will give that away. Clue number two, he has been a captain of an NHL team.
So he might currently be a captain. He might have been a captain in the past, but he's been a captain of an NHL team. It's a current NHL player who isn't with the team that drafted him. And he's been a captain or is a captain of an NHL team. Again, we're narrowing the field a little bit here, but that's going to still make it pretty hard. If you think you know the answer, Upper Deck Starter Kit up for grabs in each market today, 960, 960 or 650, 650. Trading card binder, three packs of Upper Deck Series 1 cards, exclusive sophomore sensations card, a poster, a trading card collector's guide. You could win if you've got the right answer at 960, 960 or 650, 650. Let's get to what they're saying. I thought you said it well earlier in the show, Jamie, that you might not like Austin Matthews, but at some point, you have to respect the game. He's really good. He's really good at hockey. He's not Connor McDavid, but man, the way he scores goals, the confidence he's had this season, the way he shoots the puck, like at some point, stick tap, tip your cap, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, if you are denying that he is, you know, the best goal scorer in the NHL right now, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I get it, but you got to take the anti-Leafs glasses on at a certain point and step back and admire what he's doing.
Gord Stellick, former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, covers the Leafs pre- and post-game in Toronto, had this to say about the goal Austin Matthews scored last night, which was incredible, and where Austin Matthews fits in the goal scorers that Stellick has seen over the course of his career.
Yeah, empty arena. What a shame, even though it's on the road. But, you know, and I still think with Ovi's goal, Brian Boucher helped him a little bit by overcommitting. OK, this one was, you talk about everyone's jaw's been dropping a lot as they put COVID-19 on what's, you know, given. But this was an absolute jaw dropper to watch. And, you know, I don't want to get carried away, but why the hell not? In that, you know, I love Matt Sundin and Daryl Sittler. And, you know, I didn't really see Dave Keon or Wendell Clark, you know, you name it and that. But I'm looking at him saying, you know something? I think this guy is the greatest goal scorer all time. Like, the best D I saw was Borja Sami. Borja just is in a class above, and that's no disrespect to Tim Horton, whoever else was before him. But I'm just saying, oh, my God. Like this guy is that kind of goal. That's the all-time best goal scorer in Toronto Maple Leaf history. Everything he did there, everything he did about it. And as later on Sheldon Keefe talked about it, it could have been a bad giveaway by Nick Foligno, but he saved it, batted it, how little space he needs, his hand-eye coordination, his smarts, speed of the game, you name it, and you just said, wow. And that's why the Leafs have to capitalize with some playoff success to get Austin Matthews some more playoff exposure. You know, I kind of forgot about it. He was the only guy that really played well in the bubble against Columbus. He actually played okay. We've kind of wiped it out as a bad memory that everybody sucked. But really, that wasn't the case. And just like, wow, last night, I'm with you about that. You're absolutely right, Scotty. We'll remember it 15 years down the road, 100%.
It's like he's talking to me in the clip that Scott MacArthur, he was having an interview with in Toronto this morning. But what he mentioned in that interview, Jamie, and what he kind of tied in there at the end, you know what it does? All it does is amplify the pressure on the Toronto Maple Leafs this season to deliver once we're done the regular campaign. This is a team that has not been out of the first round in forever. Austin Matthews is getting called the greatest goal scorer in franchise history. He's going to win the Rocket Richard Trophy this year. They brought in Joe Thornton. Jason Spezza is hitting career milestones. All it does, it draws more attention, and with that comes more pressure for this team to deliver.
They have tried so hard to correct the perceived flaws of those past teams, right? By bringing in Thornton, Simmons, Spezza, now Nick Foligno, right? They have gone so heavy on the veteran leadership, on the toughness, the grittiness, all of that, right? They still have the skill at the top of the lineup, of course, but they have really, really tried to correct what we all look at and think of the flaws as that team. If they fail again, if they fall flat on their face again in the first round of the playoffs, man, the temperature in Toronto is going to be out of control.
I don't even know what the bar for success is. I think it's get out of the Canadian division, but I think the floor is you have to win a round, and then it comes down to how, not what. Like, if the Leafs were to win a round and beat the Montreal Canadiens, which it looks like a certainty they're going to face in round number one, and that historic matchup, you get over there, okay, that monkey's off your back. You check that box finally. If they were to lose in really close fashion somehow, goalie standing on his head, or there's an injury along the way in round two, I think that would be somewhat palatable, but there's going to have to be more to the story than just losing in the second round for the Leafs to spin it as success this year.
It will matter how, like, let's say they lose in the second round. You're right. It will matter how to a certain degree. But there's also going to be a lot of hand-wringing if they lose in the second round. You're right. The bar right now is get out of the Canadian division, because we have heard so much throughout this season about how the Leafs are head and shoulders above the North Division, right? If they don't prove that in the playoffs, yeah, there's going to be a lot of chatter in Toronto. Ah, this team were frauds. They fooled us again in the regular season. Wait, show me when they do something in the postseason, and then I'll believe.
Quickly zip over to the world of baseball here, Jamie. Justin Morneau, former American League MVP, hit a whole lot of home runs before he got injured in his major league career. He was doing some analysis last night, and the story of the day yesterday, which fell flat in a way Vladdy Guerrero Jr. 2 days ago did not, was George Springer. Played his first game with the Jays, wasn't able to pick up a hit. He hit the ball hard a couple of times, but it didn't amount to much. The Jays got blown out yesterday. Justin Morneau changed teams, even though we most associate him with the Minnesota Twins. And he commented on what it's like to go into a new situation, have to play that new game, and his thoughts on George Springer and his debut.
I think the biggest challenge for me going into Colorado was the fact that it was Todd Helton's position for so long, and he retired, and he's, you know, more than likely going to end up in the Hall of Fame. So for me, it wasn't really any different. I was there, you know, you get settled in, you get to know everybody in spring training, and then the season starts and you kind of get into it. And for me, it was different for the fans. You know, they're used to seeing a legend out there, and I'm replacing that, and I try not to look at that way. I try to, you know, say it's not any different for me. I'm still playing first base, but for the fans looking on, it's different. And, you know, I was kind of looking at Springer the same way, going, all right, how is this different for him? And he actually didn't look out of place. Even though he was in Houston so long and had so many great years, he looked like he fit in a Blue Jays uniform. You know, sometimes you imagine seeing Tony Gwynn in a you know, a Diamondbacks uniform or something. It would seem weird, but for me, Springer looked like he fit, and he's the perfect kind of player you want to add for the cycle that they're in and their, you know, continued development, the playoff team last year, and hoping to take that next step. And you bring in a proven winner like him, and you know, he's a guy that really can set an example for all these young guys to see what it looks like when it's done right, and a guy who's been there and won. You respect that immediately, and I think he has that coming with him. I think that helps him fit in there, is the fact that guys know him, they've watched him play, they've watched him have success, they've watched him play in the biggest games, and immediately he has credibility. And then he gets in the room, and you see how he works, how he goes about his business, how he prepares, and you know what it takes to get to the next level. And he's a guy that is a perfect fit for that team right now.
That's Justin Morneau. And it's hypocritical, perhaps, of us to say this today. It's the ultimate sport where you don't overreact to one game because there's so many of them, Jamie. And Just because you did it once doesn't mean you can do it again. And I say it's hypocritical because of all the attention Vladimir Guerrero's home runs got. But he's also been doing it for a month, not hitting three home runs in a game and picking up seven RBIs and Grand Slam. But he's been really good this year, and we've been waiting on it for a while.
If Vladdy had been hitting 230, right, going into that game, you know, a lot of people would have been excited, but it wouldn't have been the same talking point, right? It's because he was already having such a strong season, and then he put the exclamation point on the first month of the season that really got people excited.
If you think you can put the exclamation point in terms of the right answer on our Upper Deck Starter Kit giveaway, you can text us at 960-960 or 650-650. I've been scanning. I don't see right answers yet.
Yeah,
you're going to have to wait.
I don't see a right answer in either text box yet, Scotty.
We will give away a clue next hour, Jamie, that will certainly get you in the right space. It'll get you a lot closer. The clue we're giving out in hour three, is that fair to say that it will get you to the right place?
That will narrow things down a lot.
It certainly will. So stick around for that. We also had a text come in that I don't quite agree with. I'll explain why next. And Brendan Morrison joins us right after this. Something happened in baseball last night that made me think we should ask Brendan Morrison about it. And I'll tell you why right after this on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Bryce Harper at the dish. Took a 97-mile-per-hour fastball. It's 96.9 to be exact. 96.9-mile-per-hour fastball in the face against the St. Louis Cardinals last night. In St. Louis, the ball hit him in the left side of the nose and cheek. Understandably, Harper dropped to the ground immediately. The batting helmet bounced off. And here's what the incredible part of it was. The only visible damage of that fast of a baseball hitting his face was a very small amount of blood on the side of his nose, Jamie. That could have been awful.
It could have been a lot worse. It looks terrible, the moment of impact, right? And, you know, you just hear it, 97 miles an hour. That's extremely, extremely fast. Anyone who's ever been hit with a baseball going a lot less than that knows how much it can sting to get it in your face like that. I mean, you're right. It's how did it not turn out worse than that?
So there was no real visible damage at the time, but with a ball hitting your face, you're thinking, okay, did he fracture his cheekbone?
Yeah.
Did he break his nose at all? There's no outward damage, but what about internally? You have to start thinking about concussions as well when that happens.
Oh, no question. That's got to be one of the first things you think about.
So he leaves the game. He goes and gets all the testing done, gets imaging, MRI, all of it. And he says, CAT scan, everything. He takes to Instagram after the game and says, I'm all good here. I'm all good. Kind of shows his nose, little bit of redness on his nose. He's like, yep, I'm all good here. I'm actually glad he provided the update. It was somewhat of a relief. Whether you like Bryce Harper or not, who cares? You're just worried about a person's health at that point. It was somewhat of a relief to see that on the highlight shows and to see that on social media last night, that Bryce Harper provided an update on his health.
No question about it. Because, that, you know, as you said, that could have been so, so much worse for him.
I don't know where it ranks in terms of the scariest things that can happen to you in sport, but it's up there. In the NHL, we talk about it all the time. Every once in a while, you'll see somebody catch a puck up high. Somebody lays out to block a shot. Maybe they catch it in the face, in the throat area. That is certainly scary. It's probably not as scary as the relatively low number of skate incidents we've seen where a skate comes up and gets a guy somewhere above the shoulders. Those are always frightening and terrifying to watch, especially when there's blood involved. So it's probably not as bad as that. But man, to have something like that happen, and then you got to step in the batter's box again today, I would think, for Bryce Harper, tomorrow whenever he plays again. That can't be easy.
No, you wouldn't think so. And, you know, I guess because, like, how many times has Bryce Harper stood in against a flamethrower, right? So he has that experience to draw on. But you would think the first time back after you just got drilled right in the face with a fastball, there's got to be a little trepidation there.
Giancarlo Stanton is the guy who comes to mind. You remember that with his face basically being broken, and he's got the bigger batting helmet because of it. He's got the piece that comes across his face, which many more hitters use now than when Stanton started using that again. But I remember kind of holding my breath the first time he got back in there and thinking, what's this going to be like? Like the internal confidence you have to have and the fearlessness that you have after something catastrophic happening like that to you, man, I can't even imagine.
And I think also, I mean, think about, you know, a football wide receiver who has to run a route over the middle again, right? After having taken that big hit from the linebacker coming the other way. And, you know, we've seen it, right? Where maybe they don't go in as forcefully for a ball as they would have normally, because in the back of their minds, they're thinking about what happened last time.
Brendan Morrison joins us now. I don't think he's ever stepped in at the major league level. If he has, it'll be a surprise to me. Former Canuck Flame, among the teams he played for in the National Hockey League, current analyst as well on Sportsnet. He joins us now. Mo, thanks very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are well. I don't know if you saw the Bryce Harper incident last night where he got hit with a fastball in the face. Did you catch that on the highlights?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah, well, he was flirting with his life there.
Oh, man. I'm wondering if anything ever happened to you on the ice, or you saw something happen to someone else on the ice that made you gun-shy at all.
Well, I think, you know, the only thing that maybe is, you know, a little bit comparable between the two is, you know, it's blocking shots when you're going out to the point. And the odd time, you know, I did my best to get out of the way of shots, but sometimes they hit you. And I remember one time when we were playing in Boston, and, you know, the key thing as a penalty killer is you want to close time and space from a guy who's shooting pucks. So the puck doesn't have time to get up to velocity and smoke you in a bad spot. So, you know, if the puck's going out, you want to get out there as quick as possible. But one time I was a little behind on a read, and Brian Ralston was in Boston at the time, and he was playing the point, and he had a cannon. And I got out there and just kind of closed my eyes, and he hit me, you know, right on the tongue of my skate. And to this day, that's over 20 years ago. And to this day, I still have a lump on my on the front part of my ankle from that shot. So, you know, once you get hit like that, and you do get a little gun shy.
I can imagine, because blocking shots, it's one of those things, if you're not there early, you might as well just not be there, right?
Absolutely. Like, it's, you know, it's a courageous thing to get down. I mean, obviously, you guys, you know, don't have anything covering their face. I mean, they got visors, but pucks can get up. But yeah, I mean, it's a skill. It really is. It's timing, and it's being able to read plays. And like you said, you don't want to be in that danger zone where you're about, you know, 15 feet away from a guy who's blasting a shot. If you can kind of close that gap, you can kind of minimize the impact a bit. But if you don't get there quick enough, it's just grit your teeth, and hopefully it hits you in some padding.
If you've got any teeth left, I wondered if you'd reference the injury in Detroit when Brendan Shanahan got you up in the teeth, decided to go dental surgeon on you, and you came back in that game and scored the game winner. Like, did you have any trepidation about going to dirty areas after that happened?
Well, let's be honest, I didn't go to many dirty areas. I had a phobia of corners and things like that, but yeah, you know, like, it crosses your mind for sure. Like, on that particular play there, I was actually just trying to go to the net and play a rebound. And I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, I don't know if there's – he just completely missed my stick and just hit me right in the face and knocked my bridge right out. But, yeah, so you go into the locker room, and right away the dentist comes in and you know, your teeth are fractured, and essentially there's nerves that are exposed, and he's pulling them out. So yeah, it's not a great feeling. It doesn't feel good at all. But at the end of the day, I think we're all kind of wired the same, where we just want to get back out and do whatever we can to help our team win games.
Mo, Canucks coach Travis Green had some fairly harsh words for his team after their loss against Ottawa yesterday, questioned their mental toughness a little bit. And it's surprising because we usually don't see that from Green. He keeps it pretty even keel in front of the media and maybe saves that more for behind closed doors with his players. When a coach like that, who normally never calls out his players in public, takes that step and actually has some harsh words for them, what kind of reaction does that get from the players in the room?
Well, you know, I think it does get guys' attention for sure, especially because they're not used to hearing that. You know, there's some guys or some coaches that, you know, say those things day after day after day, and they just get tuned out. I mean, players are sick and tired of hearing that. But when you have a coach like Travis and finally he kind of, you know, I guess, comes to his boiling point and reacts that way, I think it definitely sends a strong message to the team. And, you know, from afar, I think he's sensing, listen, like, we still – even though it's a small chance, we still have a chance here. Like, yes, there's a lot of things against us. And, you know, it's the old saying, bird in hand is worth two in the bush. And, you know, they have games in hand here. But if they got on any type of roll, I mean, they're right there. I mean, they are right there. And that last spot in the North Division with Vancouver and Calgary and Montreal, it's like, who wants that spot? I mean, it's just like, really, like, everyone is just... Night after night, teams are helping each other, but they're not helping themselves at all. Like, again, you know, last night, Montreal loses, and you think, okay, here's another opportunity for either Vancouver or Calgary to take advantage and move closer, and doesn't happen, you know? So I think it's just a little bit of frustration there from Travis and understanding that they are right there, and if they could somehow find a way to put a little string here together, then they have a good chance.
Did you ever find yourself in a situation like that, Mo, you know, late in the season where the team is still in the playoff race, but it feels like the chances are so small that the hill is so tough to climb that it was hard for you and the rest of the team to really stay engaged and stay mentally tough like Travis Green was talking about last night?
Well, I don't know. Like, the year I got traded to Vancouver, I was there for the last 11 games, so that would have been in 2000. 99-2000, and we were, you know, got on a bit of a run at the end of the season, and no one really expected us, but we hung around, and I think we lost out in the second to last game of the year. So, you know, we were right there, but we weren't right there. Then I think it was 07-08, you know, we were battling kind of for that last playoff spot. And I was actually injured, so I was watching, which is, you know, not as a player, it's the worst possible scenario. You just feel so helpless, and you know, I think we kind of got mathematically eliminated with a handful of games to go. And so, yeah, I mean, but you're a professional. I mean, you have a job to do. I mean, a lot of guys are, you know, it's that old thing. You're playing for contracts. Some guys that may be up, you know, you're playing for the respect of the organization, the fans, your teammates, and yourself. So, I mean, guys got to go out and show up and put their best foot forward.
Brendan Morrison joining us here, as he does every single Thursday on Rintoul and Sermon. Jamie Dodd jumping in as a co-host today. Cole Lind is going to make his debut for the Vancouver Canucks tonight. We're probably going to see some players who've been playing for the Stockton Heat work their way into the Flames lineup over the next number of games. There's always that cautionary tale. Hey, don't read in too much to what you see late season when they're meaningless games and guys might be playing a little bit out of position. In your opinion, what can we learn about players like Cole Lind or Connor Mackey or whoever makes their way into these respective lineups over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, these guys are going to be fired up, right? I mean, this is a lifelong dream, and to finally kind of get that opportunity to get in and play and prove that they belong. I mean, I think it's good. You know, these guys are still in the race, so they obviously, I don't know if they're going to shelter a player or not, but you know, you want to put players also in situations where they can succeed. So I think for him, sometimes you bring a young guy in, he has a lot of energy that's contagious. You know, rubs off on guys, and it could have a real positive effect. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how these guys step in and perform. I mean, if they come in and you just try to, you know, don't try to be somebody you're not. Just go out. You're there for a reason. I mean, the organization likes you for a reason. Go out and play your game and play to your capability. Like anything, no matter what it is in life, all anybody wants is an opportunity. So once you're given an opportunity, it's what you make of it. So these young guys are going to want to come in and make the most of their opportunities.
We had this text come in, which I disagree with, but I want your opinion on it. Someone texted in, Shane from Cloverdale, saying, hey, the Canadian division, it's a glorified KHL-level division. That's why there's so many guys having career years. These guys would have great years, but they wouldn't be on the same place, say, pace if, say, the Leafs were playing the Canes in Tampa or if McDavid was playing Vegas or Colorado. I disagree for this reason. The bottom of those divisions is bad. Like, the best players would still fill it up against teams like Detroit or the California teams, whatever we're talking about here. Do you discount anything that you've seen from the likes of McDavid or Matthews because of the context of this season?
No, I don't. You know, Connor McDavid's on a different planet right now. I mean, you're watching him play. It's remarkable what he's doing night in and night out. And it seems like he's getting better every single night. I mean, it's just how he does things at that speed. It really is unparalleled, in my opinion. I don't think we've ever seen a player do those things at that speed. But, you know, I don't think it discounts. I mean, sure, are there other divisions that are strong? Like, you know, you look at the Mass Mutual East Division, I guess. We got Washington, Pittsburgh, Islanders, Boston. I mean, like, the Rangers are 8 games over .500, and they're probably not going to get in the playoffs, right? I mean, they're still sitting 4 back of Boston. But you look at that division, you're playing New Jersey, you're playing Buffalo, you're playing Philly. All those teams have given up over 170 goals. There's only one team, Ottawa, who's given up over 170 goals in the North Division, right? I mean, maybe that division with Carolina, Florida, Tampa, yeah, that's probably the strongest. You know, it's tough to say. I mean, that's a good division. But Vegas and the West, Honda West division is good too. But no, it's kind of dragging this answer out here. But no, it does not discount anything that those guys are doing, in my opinion.
Mo, there's been a bit of a debate recently about the Calder Trophy. It looks like Kirill Kaprizov is going to win it, although Jason Robertson's making a really great late push here late in the season. But, you know, as always happens when a player like Kaprizov is the front runner, some people come out of the woodwork and say, well, listen, he's a little bit older and he played professionally for a long time or for several seasons in the KHL. Maybe he shouldn't be eligible for the Calder Trophy. Do you have a problem with a player like Kaprizov taking home the Calder?
No, I don't. I mean, you know, guys that play in Europe typically turn pro earlier than guys over in North America. That's just kind of, you know, the way it goes. You know, he's kind of been ranked, I think, the top prospect outside of the NHL the past 2 years. But you never know how that's going to translate when guys come over. I mean, there's a lot of guys who've been, you know, rated very, very highly, and then they get into the NHL and just can't adjust and can't adapt. So I don't think you should penalize him just because he is a little bit older and he has played pro hockey previously. I mean, he was comfortable. He didn't feel like he was ready to make the jump yet, and he's come over here and he's proven he can do it. You know, I think the nod goes to him right now, although, you know, Jason Robertson in Dallas is finishing strong. I mean, geez, he's just been on fire here lately. But I think Kaprizov is a little bit more dynamic. I mean, he's kind of like a human highlight reel. I mean, the way he scores goals, he's just flashy, right? He just draws attention.
There have been calls for more dynamic questioning in this segment. So, despite the fact we have other topics that we could get to with you, Mo, we're going to bring in a guest questioner. We're throwing you a little bit of a curveball here. We've got someone else on the line that you will know who has a couple of questions for you. We welcome to the program now Bob Shanks joining us here for a couple of questions for Brendan Morrison.
Boy.
Bob, welcome to the show. You go ahead.
Hey, Scotty. Good to be on the show again. Hey, BMO, I just want to know... Will you be ready to go come Pro-Am time, even though we don't know when that is, that's going to happen?
Bob is, I'm speaking to the man, the myth, the legend. I know most people know who Bob is, but if they don't, I mean, he is a champion for Canuck Autism Network and is the single largest fundraiser for Canuck Autism Network, and he is an unbelievable human being, and I've had the pleasure of playing on his team the past 2 years, and what a great group of guys we have. Bob, I'm committed, I'm dedicated, you know, I'm gonna I've been trying to stay in game shape here, but I think I can take it up a level. Like, I think I can, you know, I think I can get on the bike and push a little harder and things like that. But I'll be ready to go whenever the CAN tournament starts up again.
That's awesome to hear there, BMO. And also, I wanted to ask you about the how sweet it is raffle that's going on right now. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I've seen some information about that floating around. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome raffle. People can support CAN and get a chance to win three Canucks jerseys, Daniel and Henrik and Elias Pettersson. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, that's again a great cause again, and three pretty phenomenal prizes there. Like three of the best Swedish players that have ever been in Vancouver. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, Emo, I just wanted to know what's your best memory playing with the Daniel and Henrik Sedin?
Oh, geez, Paul, that's a tough one. They're such great players and such classy individuals. I mean, so many good memories. I mean, right from our initial training camp, when they were rookies in the league, we had our training camp in Stockholm in 2001, 10 days over in Stockholm, and just remembering those guys as young men and kind of how they evolved into the players they were. But, you know, one of my best memories, Bob, is they were very good soccer players. And I loved playing soccer before games and warming up and getting ready for games. But I loved it. We played sewer ball, you know, like two-touch sewer ball. And I loved it when I knocked those guys out of the sewer ball game. They got so mad, but that was one of my favorite things to do.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Bob, you got one more, buddy?
I do. I do have one more. Who's your favorite? Who are some of your top teammates that you've played with over your career in Calgary and Vancouver?
So many great teammates and memories. You know, I can't honestly say I ever played with a teammate that I didn't like. I'm still in touch today with some guys from New Jersey, like you know, Scott Niedermeyer and Patrick Elias a little bit. And it's great people. And in Vancouver, I have a lot of good roommates. Obviously, Marcus and Todd were my teammates. And you know, Eddie Jovanovski was my roommate for a lot of years. So many guys.
Oh, Jovo. Yeah.
In Calgary here, and got a chance to play with Iggy and Robin McGeer and Kiprasov, and I see Rhett Warner around here quite a bit. And so a lot of good guys, man. A lot of good people in the hockey world.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, Bob, thank you very much for doing this today. As Brendan mentioned, you're the highest individual fundraiser for the Canuck Autism Network in the history of it. You've raised over $250,000. I know your goal is to get to $300,000 in the near future. Thanks for coming on and giving Mo a bit of a surprise and livening up our segment for us today.
Well, I appreciate being on, Scotty. We'll get on again soon.
Absolutely.
Hey, Bob, one last thing for Bob. Bob, you better start working on those pregame speeches, because I know last year that's really what put us over the top and winning that championship was your pregame speeches. So let's get those things ready and get the boys fired up.
Hey, BMO, I'll to answer that question. When I do those pregame speeches, it's always on a whim. Like I speak like right from the heart, right in the moment. So when I fire you guys up, it's from inside, and what comes out is hopefully helpful. So
it's awesome. Thanks Bob.
All right, see ya, bye.
That is Bob Shanks. We threw you a little curveball there, Mo. I know you talked about the great players that you've had over the course of your career, but I know he's the best coach you've ever had.
Well, hands down. I mean, he walks around the rink, this guy. Everybody knows him. Like I said, such a fantastic human being. Always concerned about everybody else, right? Never concerned about him. It's always give, give, give. and making sure everybody's having a good time and enjoying what they're doing. And, you know, hanging around or being around a guy like that, actually, it makes your day better. It puts you in a better mood. So, yeah, nothing but great things to say about Bob Shanks.
I agree wholeheartedly. Thank you very much for this. Thank you very much for that and your continued support of both us and, of course, the Canuck Autism Network as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Scotty. You guys have a great weekend.
You as well. That is Brendan Morrison, joins us every Thursday. Yeah, we threw a little curveball in there. It's not quite Feel Good Friday, but a little feel good going into the weekend. You talk about someone who's done so much for his community. Jamie, over $250,000 he has raised for the Canuck Autism Network. We just wanted to give people an idea that, and just have a little light, fun time here on the program here today. There's a couple days left. You can get in on that draw that Bob Shanks mentioned. It's the How Sweet It Is draw, Canuck Autism Network. You can buy a ticket for $5, three for 10, or you can get 10 for 20. Pardon me. Yeah, 3 for 10 or 10 for 20. You can do that by going to the Canuck Autism Network. Fun story here on this Thursday.
Yeah, we always have time to support the Canucks Autism Network a little bit, and cool to hear a little bit more about the story from Bob Shanks. I know a lot of our listeners will know the name, and also just to hear and get a sense of the relationship that the Canucks Autism Network can help build, right? You heard how much Mo and Bob enjoy each other's company. That was pretty cool.
Absolutely. We got another clue coming your way. We got something to give away, an Upper Deck starter kit. I have not seen a correct answer yet. Some people are getting close, though, Jamie. The next clue will lead you in the right direction. That is coming up next segment. Dan Schulman joins us next hour. And coming up next, we will have the venue draft. We're drafting venues from around North America for sporting events. We'll explain more next when Rintoul and Dodd continues.